This is the Phelan & Myers 2 for 20 with the Willett, Phelan, Myers & Rotts Wealth Management Group of Janie Montgomery Scott. Janie, a member of FINRA, SIPC, and the New York Stock Exchange, maintains a presence in Duluth with their office at 6340 Sugarloaf Parkway, Suite 130, Duluth, Georgia.
Welcome to Phelan & Myers 2 for 20. We are here today with Mark Lucchini. He is the Chief Investment Strategist for my firm, Janie Montgomery Scott. So welcome, Mark. Thank you for being here from Philadelphia.
Glad to be here. Thanks, Scott.
Okay, so you're on the Phelan & Myers 2 for 20 podcast now, but you're generally on what? CNBC, Fox Business, you've done them all, right?
All of the above, and Bloomberg included, plus various radio and other news-related outlets. So we get our voice and our brand out to the marketplace, I think, as well as anybody.
Okay. Well, thank you for being here. Thank you for being on a local podcast. So let's talk about the economy, the stock market, the bond market today. Let's just kind of cover everything over the next 20 minutes. Now, this is really probably the most anticipated recession I've ever seen in my entire life. So what is the state of the economy currently? I mean, people were anticipating a recession late last year, then the first part of this year. It's never materializing. So where do you see things?
Well, it hasn't. Just to drop back for a moment, if you think about 2022, which was the year in which the market fell from peak to trough in October of about 27% before rallying in the year end, but still finishing down in the upper teens, it was principally due to the fact that investors were worried about a recession that seemed to be developing, but ended up being postponed. And so as we sit here today, Scott, and look at all the indicators, both in terms of what has been occurring as well as what anticipatory factors lead one to believe will likely be occurring. We just don't foresee a recession as an imminent threat. Today's GDP announcement that we had 1.6% pace of growth here in the first quarter was somewhat disappointing. But if you look inside the numbers, some of that was attributed to being on the wrong side of trade and inventory factors. If you strip that out and look at real final sales to domestic purchasers, which is to say consumption, which is what drives almost 70% of economic activity in this country, that figure was north of 3%. Which is about on par with what we saw in the fourth quarter last year. And that's a particularly strong pace. It's indicative of the fact that the labor market is tight, people are employed, and they're willing to part with money. And that's helping to propel economic activity forward. And unless that changes soon, which doesn't appear to be likely, it means we have a lot of momentum in the economy to continue to further postpone that recession that is not as widely anticipated today as it was going back almost a couple of years ago.
So if we don't have a recession, do you anticipate the Fed still cutting rates?
Well, I think the Fed wants to cut interest rates because I feel as though that they have seen inflation readings start to decelerate down and toward their target of 2% and feel reasonably confident that the glide path for further continuation of that slowdown in inflation is likely. However, it is the pace of the economy, once again, driven by strong employment conditions that is helping to keep demand elevated and as a consequence, keeping prices somewhat above that level. So at this juncture, while it seemed likely not too many months ago that they were going to cut interest rates no less than three times this year, it appears quite unlikely that they may even have a chance to get to three. But I think we're likely to see perhaps one, possibly two on the horizon, since by most accounts, inflation is likely going to continue to slow down and allow the Federal Reserve to reduce some of its current restrictive policy.
Okay. So interest rate cuts are going to be a function of where's inflation? Is inflation dropping versus is the economy in a recession?
Most definitely. Right now, their almost single focus seems to be inflation. And they have the wherewithal, though, at the same time, to be patient in not lowering interest rates, since obviously it hasn't had an adverse impact on the economy or the job market. So far, at least, they've been negotiating a very delicate balance of balancing the risks of trying to lower inflation by holding interest rates high, while at the same time not undermining positive economic activity.
So what is our expectation in terms of interest rate cuts this year? Has Janie come out with an official statement on the number of times they think that the Fed will cut?
We think it's going to be likely two or less, since it appears once again that we're not going to see a rate cut come in June. And obviously, while the Federal Reserve is an apolitical body, it seems unlikely to us that they are going to make any decision point in the November meeting, which occurs just around the election. So that leaves only a couple of meetings before now and year end, which once again leads us to think that we're likely to see one, possibly two cuts. But getting to three would only probably occur were we to see a marked slowdown in economic activity between now and year end.
Okay. And then can you talk just briefly about the relationship between interest rates and bond prices? So for example, you know, there were folks, not many of my clients, because I'm not a big advocate of bond funds, but if you had a bond mutual fund in 2022, that bond mutual fund was down 10 or 15%. Can you just speak briefly about, you know, bonds and interest rates and the price of bonds?
Sure. You're talking about an instrument that is a bond whose value tends to move in an inverse relationship with that of the direction of interest rates, which is to say, as you mentioned, as a clear and a recent example, 2022, where you had rampant inflation and you also had the Fed embark on an interest rate hiking campaign for the first time in a long time and raise rates at such a rapid pace, unlike anything we've seen in 40 years, that pushed up interest rates or yields on bonds. And again, that inverse relationship caused the value of those bonds or bond prices to fall directionally. And as a consequence, we had one of the worst years in the bond market in almost 50. And so as we look forward, we think the prospects are that given now that we've seen the massive adjustment in interest rates to levels that we think are reasonably attractive, that it seems unlikely to us, unless we have another resumption of a bout of inflation, that we're going to see probably a fairly steady or perhaps even grinding lower yields as a consequence of economic activity that's likely to persist positive, but probably trending a little bit slower than what we've seen over the last 18 months.
Okay. As interest rates go up, the value of bonds go down. As interest rates go down, the value of bonds go up, generally speaking. And so we're kind we're in a sideways move versus a potentially down move. So presumably the prices of bonds will at least stay stable, if nothing else. Certainly not another 22. Yeah.
Yes, more like a stable environment than what we saw in 2022.
Okay. So let's gravitate now or pivot to the stock market. So in 2022, if you take a look at the S&P was down approximately 20%. Last year in 2023, it was up approximately 24%. We were on a great little run first quarter, January, February, March, have had a little bit of volatility here in the month of April. What are we expecting, you know, as we go through 2024, come up on the presidential election? I was at lunch today, for example, and somebody said, you know, it's a presidential election year. The stock market's going to probably, you know, continue to do reasonably well, which I think if you look at the data on that may or may not be the case. But what are we expecting as we go through the remainder of the year?
Last year, we had an excellent return in the stock market, primarily propelled by the fact that the price-to-earnings ratio or the multiple on stocks expanded at a far greater pace than that of the corporate profits that were produced by the companies that comprised the stock market. In fact, over the first half of 2023, we had negative year-over-year growth in earnings, and that started to turn around in the second half of last year and is continuing here in the first quarter of 2024, which is really the support that you need ultimately for stock prices to build a sustainable advance. So we saw stocks perhaps get a little ahead of themselves coming out of the first couple of months of this year. Now we're seeing what has at least so far been a very normal and customary correction in prices that perhaps needed to be cooled off somewhat, or perhaps got somewhat exhausted in terms of the buying pressure that was applied to them early in the year. And to go through a process in which those gains have been digested doesn't necessarily mean we have to see the bull market derailed. In fact, as you noted, if past is prologue, what we typically see is some softness in the stock market, some weakness from the end of May in over the summer of an election year, only to see a rally mount into the fourth quarter and through the end of an election year. So wouldn't necessarily put chips in the middle of the table on that notion that history is going to repeat. But since it does tend to rhyme, and since we do have a reasonably sanguine outlook for the economy, which should produce a profit growth picture that enables stocks to continue to advance, we think it'll be a reasonably healthy year for stock prices and for investors to be rewarded for having stayed through the volatility we're experiencing today and could continue to as we not only kind of work through some of the domestic issues, high inflation, obviously a highly polarized electoral process, but as well the geopolitical risks that lurk out there.
And then what sectors do we like? It seems like, you know, especially last year, technology just went crazy. The S&P was moved by a handful of stocks, but there are a lot of stocks out there, you know, good quality blue chip dividend paying companies that just haven't participated to the same extent that, you know, the NVIDIAs, the Microsofts, you know, the Apples of the world that really moved the market last year. So are we kind of going to where we feel like there's more value with some of those dividend paying type stocks? What sectors do we think are going to outperform for the remainder of the year?
Well, I think you nailed it, Scott. I mean, last year and even into the first couple of months of this year, once again, leadership was those tech and tech-related companies, and largely for good reason. I mean, these are iconic businesses that have fortress balance sheets, are generating high free cash flow, have, you know, profit forecasts that are very appealing, but at some point, valuation does matter. And they became extremely expensive on a price-to-earnings multiple basis. And so what we're seeing today is some rotation into other sectors that hadn't necessarily been indicted by the market for performing poorly. They just weren't as sexy as companies that were related to or tangentially a part of the whole artificial intelligence movement. Today, we find much better value in sectors like materials, industrials. Certainly, energy has been actually the leadership so far in 2024. And even, believe it or not, stodgy old utility stocks look very appealing, not so much because of their historic characteristics of being defensive in nature with an above-market dividend yield, but rather the electrification of everything in terms of decarbonization and obviously the movement towards electric vehicles and the huge cloud-based data centers that are being used to support not only these technology Goliaths, but as well the expansion and needs for cooling data centers for the support of artificial intelligence, language models, and so on. And so collectively, that's put a bit into utility stocks that has also made them, in our view, a very attractive proposition to utilize alongside of these great technology companies that will continue to perform well, but perhaps not sustain the advance that we saw that they had elicited over the last, call it 14 or 15 months to continue unabated.
And in AI, you know, AI reminds me a little bit of, if you remember, marijuana stocks like 5 years ago and then Bitcoin a couple of years ago. When everybody's calling about it, that's the time you probably should be selling. So I feel a little bit that way about AI. So I'm curious what your opinion of AI is. It seems to me that long term, it's a great place to be, but short term, the air may come out of that balloon a little bit. Do you have a similar opinion of that?
Yeah, I do. I sympathize with that view. You know, clearly there's been a company, NVIDIA, to name one, and there are others that have found a way, at least very early on in this cycle, even though AI is not necessarily new, it's come up and seems to be very present, that have figured out a way to monetize the whole AI, super cycle, if you will, that ultimately has, you know, game-changing properties associated with perhaps boosting productivity and enhancing the quality of life here in the United States and in other countries around the world. But that's more off into the perhaps intermediate to distant future. For the time being, it's limited to very few companies. And so what we've seen is companies that have either mentioned in the course of corporate earnings announcements that they're broadening their use of artificial intelligence or making investments in artificial intelligence in the hopes that it too can benefit from this super cycle, have gotten bid up by investors. Ultimately, cooler heads will prevail, and there'll be winners and losers. And ultimately, I think it's going to be a beneficial, potentially productivity and profitability boosting exercise in terms of a wider adoption of AI. But for the moment, it seems as though investors would be better served thinking about chasing some of these stocks that have already been bid up substantially on expectations that are going to be very difficult to fulfill.
I agree. Let's talk briefly about geopolitical issues. So there's some issues going on, you know, the headlines in the Middle East, obviously. You've got the potentially China invading Taiwan, although it seems like that's been on the back burner a little bit. Historically, how do geopolitical issues impact, you know, the stock market and the U.S. economy? Can you give us a little color on that?
Oftentimes on the initial news, whatever it might be, the market tends to react in a sell first, ask questions later fashion. And then once you assess what really transpired and the potential economic impact and the likely duration of whatever the encounter was, oftentimes the market kind of gets its footing once again and overcomes whatever the initial, you know, downdraft or pullback in stock prices or correction in prices occurs. We've seen that even more recently. Obviously, there's no price you can put on the human toll of what's been inflicted in the Middle East, whether you're talking about, obviously, the attack on Israel or even what's transpiring in Eastern Europe between Ukraine and Russia. But we also saw that, for instance, in the case of October 7th, you saw an immediate spike in oil prices as concerns were obviously it being a hotbed for a concentration of energy production. And that premium that was inserted into oil prices literally faded within 24 hours as investors were able to assess that it wasn't likely, at least for the time being, to metastasize into something broader and consume more countries and impact long-term effects on oil production or supply. And so we'll go through these rolling periods in which investors have to certainly monitor these situations very closely, because obviously any of them at the moment, it seems, are only one or two turns away from obviously metastasizing into something that would be more sinister and have a larger impact on stock prices. But for the time being, at least, it's something to stay tuned to, but not necessarily be making judgments purely on the headlines of one particular event to make long-term decisions that could ultimately be costly and impair one's long-term investment portfolio results.
Thank you very much for taking the time out of your busy schedule to be here with us, kind of give us a mid-year update on the stock market, the bond market, the economy. We greatly appreciate it. I know how busy you are. So thank you for taking a few minutes out of your day to do this with us.
Thank you. Thanks for the invitation and the chance to be a part of it, Scott.
Absolutely. Thank you for listening to Phelan and Myers. It's 2 for 20.
The information provided here is taken from sources which we believe to be reliable, but the accuracy and completeness of such information is not guaranteed by us. This is not an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any securities. Opinions expressed are subject to change without notice and do not take into account the particular investment objectives, financial situation, or needs of individual investors. Employees of Janney Montgomery Scott, LLC, or its affiliates may at times release written or oral commentary, technical analysis, or trading strategies that differ from the opinions expressed here. Investing may involve market risk, including possible loss of principal. Janney Montgomery Scott, LLC, its affiliates, and its employees are not in the business of providing tax, regulatory, accounting, or legal advice. Any tax-related statements are not intended for and cannot be used or relied upon by any such taxpayer for the purpose of avoiding tax penalties. Any such taxpayer should seek advice based on the taxpayer's particular circumstances from an independent tax advisor. For more information about Janny, please see Janny's Relationship Summary Form CRS on www.janny.com/CRS, which details all material facts about the scope and terms of our relationship with you and any potential conflicts of interest.